First, President Trump decided to end subsidy payments to health insurance companies, a move that's expected to raise premiums for middle-class families.
The president also signed an executive order directing agencies to make it easier for groups of employers to come together to offer insurance. In some cases, groups may be able to buy coverage across state lines.
Donna Friedsam is the Health Policy Programs Director of the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. Donna, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
Let's start with the announcement about halting federal payments for cost-sharing reductions. These are payments, as I understand it, that go to insurance providers. What did these payments do? What did they allow for?
Well, this is somewhat confusing the way it's been covered because a lot of people believe that this means there's no more subsidies or federal financial assistance to help buy health insurance, and that is not the case. What these cost-sharing reductions do, from the federal level, what President Trump decided is that the federal government will not pay the health insurance companies any longer to provide the cost-sharing reductions. But that does not mean the cost-sharing reductions will no longer exist. In fact, the cost-sharing reductions will continue to exist for people that qualify, the low-income people below 250% of the federal poverty level. But the federal government will no longer reimburse the health insurance companies for providing those discounts.
Is this, as I've read it, middle-class people who may go to the Affordable Care Act marketplace for coverage, they might have gotten a discount from the insurance provider. That provider was then reimbursed in a way by the government, but they don't qualify for the individual subsidies from the federal government. Are they people who might be affected by this?
Okay, so what you just described had it a little bit mixed up in that it's the lower income people that get the subsidies for the cost sharing reductions, and also people who are below four times the federal poverty level who qualify for premium assistance to purchase health insurance. It's the middle class people, middle income people who don't qualify for the federal subsidies who are most exposed when premiums go up, because they do not qualify for any federal premium assistance and end up paying the full amount when premiums go up. Whereas the lower income people, when the premiums go up, their federal financial assistance to support their purchase of the health insurance goes up in the same way to help them continue buying the insurance. So this is somewhat complex, but when the federal government decides that it's not going to pay the health insurance companies any longer to provide these cost-sharing reductions, what the health insurance companies are going to do and are doing is they build those costs into their premiums. And so the premiums go up, and middle-income people end up having to pay that increase in premiums. Lower-income people will not pay that increase. Instead, the federal government, ironically, will pay that increase through the premium subsidies that the federal government pays.
Looking at those middle-class families who are affected, what kind of difference could this potentially make? I know it depends on how insurance companies change their prices potentially, but what kind of impact are people looking at here?
Well, we see in Wisconsin that the health insurance premiums for the ACA, the Affordable Care Act compliant plans, are increasing on average 36%, and that is directly tied to the federal government's decision not to pay the health insurance companies the price of the cost-sharing reductions, as well as some other moves that have been made by the federal government that have created business uncertainty and high risk for the health insurance companies in this market.
Is this decision to not pay these cost savings payments to insurance companies, is this a money saver for the federal government?
Over the next couple of years, this is actually going to increase the amount of money that the federal government is going to need to pay out in the form of higher premium subsidies for lower-income people. Because, like I said, lower-income people, they will get premium subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, and the premium subsidy is tied to their income, and they will not pay more than a certain percentage of their income toward a premium. So as the premium goes up, the federal government needs to provide a larger and larger subsidy to make up for that increase in premium. So the federal government will be paying more that out of the U.S. Treasury than it would have paid.
An argument from critics of the Affordable Care Act is that, all right, we're paying subsidies to individuals. On the one hand, we're also paying these cost-sharing subsidies to the insurance companies. This is a sign that this is a bad design. We have to keep injecting federal money into this system. That's a sign that the system is flawed in the first place. What do you think of that?
Well, we have always had various subsidies for health insurance for people all across the income spectrum. You and I and everybody else who gets health insurance through our employers have it subsidized through the tax code, because employers get various deductions associated with providing employer-sponsored health insurance, and that is a subsidy for health insurance. So it costs less to them than it would otherwise. Lower-income people get various subsidies through Medicaid, and then the Affordable Care Act developed a range of premium subsidies to try to extend health insurance to people up into the middle incomes, up through 400% of the federal poverty level. So this is not unusual. And in Medicare as well, there is a whole range of subsidies that go to individuals at lower incomes. And as well, there's a reinsurance program for middle to allow the program to take on high-risk cases. So this is not an unusual situation in healthcare in general.
We're talking to Donna Friedsam from the UW Population Health Institute, looking at two executive orders from the president on the Affordable Care Act. Let's move on to the other one now. The president signed an executive order that would make it easier for groups of employers to come together to offer insurance and change some rules related to that. Here's the president talking about that order.
This order takes first steps to make it easier for businesses to help their workers afford high quality and more flexible health care through reimbursement accounts. With these actions, we are moving toward lower costs and more options in the health care market and taking crucial steps toward saving the American people from the nightmare of Obamacare.
Donna, can you walk us through what would change under this executive order?
Well, the first thing to understand is that President Trump, in yesterday's executive order, essentially directed his cabinet agencies to develop a set of regulations. So it's going to take many, many months for these regulations to come out and go under review. So nothing's going to change in the near term at all. And probably it'll take almost a year before we see anything come from what was announced yesterday. That being said, with regard to the executive order, what President Trump is trying to promote is the development of a set of plans that will be less comprehensive in coverage and be able to attract younger, healthier people and provide them with coverage at a lower cost. And that will indeed occur under the kinds of plans that President Trump's executive order is trying to promote, these association health plans and other kinds of reimbursement accounts. So no longer will plans have to provide the comprehensive set of benefits or provide protections for pre-existing conditions and the like. So younger, healthier people will be attracted to these kinds of plans. They will pay much lower premiums for these kinds of plans. But what the problem that people identify with this is that it will draw the younger, healthier people toward these less comprehensive plans and essentially bifurcate the market or separate the market into two different groups, younger, healthier people into these kind of skinny plans, and then the older and sicker people will remain in the more comprehensive plans. And when that happens, the more comprehensive plans will have much higher premiums because they can't kind of spread the risk over a broader pool of people. So that's the concern there. As well, when younger, healthier people move into these less comprehensive plans, they're going to need to understand that they won't have coverage for certain things. If they do get sick or get hurt, they may find that they're not covered for things that they thought they were covered for.
Right. And do pre-existing conditions come into that? Could these lower cost plans be more restrictive than they have been in recent years?
Exactly. That's what's likely to occur. It's likely to be plans that we saw before the Affordable Care Act.
And I believe the president's goal is also to let insurance companies sell across state lines, the idea being that would give more competition. We'd be able to compete. We'd be able to look at plans from all over the country here, say in Wisconsin. Is that state line issue something that could help lower costs for some people or even everybody?
You know, I think that the issue of whether insurance companies sell across state lines is really something that there's a lot of discussion about, but probably not going to have a significant effect either way, to tell you the truth. The concern there is that, you know, many people say, well, it'll create a race to the bottom and health insurers will all, you know, locate in the states with the lowest regulation and, you know, and then people will only be able to buy, you know, the least regulated health insurance. But, you know, I really don't see that happening because I think that health insurers ultimately have to put together a provider network wherever they're doing business. And it's very difficult for health insurers in far-flung places to put together a provider network in the local area where they're selling insurance. So we do have some states in the country that actually do currently allow the sale of insurance across state lines, and there have not been insurance companies who've taken up the opportunity to do that simply because it is very difficult for them to put together a good provider network that will attract consumers. Frankly, I don't see it as a game changer one way or the other.
Donna Friedsam is with us. She directs health policy programs at the UW Population Health Institute. We're looking at two new executive orders affecting the Affordable Care Act.
What do you make of the White House's actions involving the Affordable Care Act? Will this affect you and your family? Business owners, are you happy about the executive order? You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also tweet at Central Time WPR to join the discussion.
We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're looking at two new executive orders now on health care. The president signed an order ending federal payments for cost-sharing reductions. He also directed federal agencies to rewrite regulations on selling a certain type of health insurance across state lines. Donna Friedsam is with us from the UW Population Health Institute.
And you can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these moves from the Trump White House on health care? Do you think Congress should act and try to come up with some kind of solution, repeal and replace, fix the Affordable Care Act, make changes? What kind of changes would you like to see? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Peter is with us in Madison. Peter, hi.
Hi, we need Medicare for all. That's the only way that we can cost-effectively cover everyone. I'm really happy and proud that Tammy Baldwin signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. In terms of what Trump is doing, I think, ironically, it's actually going to get us closer to Medicare for All because it's going to make health care even more expensive, and it's going to make the Democrats, their argument, to make that much easier. I think the only question really is, are the Democrats going to be able to withstand the lobbying from the insurance industry? And are they going to be willing to turn down the money of the insurance industry and really fight for the people?
Peter, thanks for the call. A lot there. Donna, let's start off with the idea of Medicare for All. There is a Democratic proposal on the table in Congress. They are the minority party, of course. But have you looked at that option? What would that look like?
Well, it's a complicated answer to go into what it would look like. I will say that one of the issues, regardless of your politics or your political beliefs, is just the route to get there. And like the caller kind of indicates, right now it's going to be a very challenging route to get to Medicare for All. But I will say that one of the major challenges is that the Medicare program pays providers less than commercial and private health insurance pays. And that doesn't mean they don't pay providers the right amount, but they certainly do pay less. And that is less money circulating in the health system. And what we really need to do is talk about why does healthcare cost so much. And a lot of people like to point to health insurance companies themselves and say that they are the villains. That's why everything is so expensive. But in fact, there's a lot of to be said about the high cost of health care in the United States, separate from the health insurance industry. And when we just go to Medicare for all without addressing the overall cost of health care, then what we're doing is pulling money out of the pockets of the healthcare delivery system, where there's a lot of people that consider that their money. And that creates a lot of political distress. And that's why I think the conversation has to be much larger than just pointing a finger at the health insurance industry and talking about what's going on in healthcare, who's making money in the healthcare industry, and what kind of waste do we have in healthcare.
Yeah, what would be a good place to start with controlling healthcare costs? Again, not health insurance costs, but actual costs providing healthcare.
Well, you know, there are efforts underway to look at the way we pay providers and the kinds of care that is being provided. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that about 30% of the expenditures in healthcare are simply wasted expenditures that don't need to occur. But we also do, frankly, understand that in the United States, our prices are a lot higher than throughout the rest of the world. So we have problems with overuse, misuse. We utilize the wrong kinds of services. We could provide primary care a lot more and perhaps a lot less of these very expensive high-tech specialty services in certain areas. And as well, there's certain things that we just simply price very high in this country. But it's difficult to have this conversation because people currently depend on the way things are structured now for their incomes. So we're talking about taking money out of people's pockets.
We're talking to Donna Friedson from the UW Population Health Institute. Our starting point, two executive orders from the Trump administration on the Affordable Care Act. Back to your calls now. Kelly is with us in Madison. Kelly, hi. Kelly, go ahead.
Okay. So I am a family of four. I have two young children. I work in the pharmaceutical industry. And recently I'm seeing a trend where between myself and my colleagues and my friends, our companies are dropping, you know, the good coverage that we've been used to for the past 10, 20 years and going towards these high deductible plans where we pay 100% out of pocket, so we hit a very high deductible, and then maybe, you know, it kicks in at 80-20%. But in the meantime, I'm still paying a pretty good premium per month for no coverage, basically. And then this type of plan doesn't cover any mental health coverage, alternative type things like chiropractor care or things that you might seek for chronic pain. And you feel like you can't afford to take care of yourself and that you can only go to the doctor in a crisis or emergency, and then you're left with these very high bills.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Donna, is this something we're seeing? This is not on the marketplace here. This is, she says, through private employers. Are we seeing more of them go to higher deductible but still a premium type plans?
Absolutely. This has been a trend that's been going on for the past 15 years, well before the Affordable Care Act, and even I'd say 20 years, that employers have been moving toward these high deductible health plans and these consumer-driven, what they call consumer-driven accounts, where there's this idea that if you get consumers to need to spend more money out of their own pockets, they'll think harder about the kind of care that they use. But the problem with that is that consumers may use less services that they don't need, but at the same time, we have evidence that consumers will also use less services that they actually do need. So cost sharing is a very blunt instrument to try to reduce healthcare expenditures, but we absolutely have been seeing that trend for the last 15 to 20 years.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Go next to Deacon in Sheboygan. Deacon, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I've got a question I wanted to ask the guest. As far as the Affordable Care Act goes, the Republicans say it's collapsing under its own weight, or they have a lot of reasons for that, I suppose. And then on the other end, they're constantly doing things to force it to fail or collapse. My question is, how much is the Affordable Care Act failing on its own as opposed to how much it's being pushed into failing by other powers?
Deacon, thanks. Donna, what do you think?
There's a lot of, I mean, that's a question that people have been debating quite a bit. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that after last year, there were price corrections in the market that caused a large increase in premiums based on various policies that had occurred. And then people had understood, various analysts had understood pretty broadly that that could have been a one-time correction and that, that things were ready to stabilize. And that this year, a lot of instability came into the market because of the political environment, the uncertainty, and all the policies that were introduced that took away the certainty and created the question about whether the insurance carriers would be able to enroll a good group of a good risk group and have the support of the federal government. So I think that pretty broadly people understand that, and I don't think this is a partisan perspective, that the federal the current administration does not support the Affordable Care Act and has taken steps to try to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, and that has put pressure on the program in terms of the health insurance carriers being able to provide an affordable product. So I would say that in general, President Trump determined that he wanted to try to make the program unsustainable.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Donna Friedsam from the UW Population Health Institute.